Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time Podcast. I'm Matt Emmert.
And I'm Tim Murdoch. Today's special guest played Haddonfield Memorial's good nurse, Janet, in the sequel to the original Halloween, Halloween 2. You may also remember her as a scheming, selfish heiress, Melissa, on 7 seasons of Falcon Crest. I love horror movies, but soaps are a very close second. Please welcome to the podcast, Anna Alicia.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you so much.
Yes, of course. You know, before we even get into Halloween 2 and everything, I read that you grew up in Mexico City, and then while attending college, you performed with a dinner theater company in Texas. What was that experience like? And were you always interested in becoming an actor when you were growing up?
From my understanding and my memory, I was always either dancing or dreaming or creating plays. I was charging 5 cents when I was 6 for people to come in the backyard behind some sheets and watch a play. And I was succeeding. My sister was, you know, the money taker. So I think it was always, I know it was always in me to create. And acting was part of that. And I was born in Mexico, raised in Acapulco until my father passed away when I was 6. And then we came to El Paso, Texas, and lived there with my grandmother and my uncle until they moved out when I was around 9 or 10. And then I moved out when I was 18 to go to college in Boston at Wellesley. And then one summer I came home and I was offered a equity contract at the new local dinner theater where all of these big stars were coming in. And I was asked to play all of the, you know, smaller female roles in those productions. And so I was getting a big paycheck and I just had to leave Wellesley and go to the University of Texas and finish there. And there was like, sure, why not? I'd loved, you know, to work professionally. So I did that and got to work with a lot of really interesting people, Bob Denver, you know, Gavin McLeod, Dana Andrews. I mean, a lot of, you know, names at the time. And, you know, it was pretty great.
That is so cool. I mean, like, I love the story of like a kid, like, I think stories from childhood and people who've become creative artists, you know, just hearing the kind of things they were into, you know, like the doing your own shows and charging money, like that is such a cool story. We also saw that then after college, you moved out to Los Angeles. What was it like to make that leap from, you know, doing theater to moving to LA and auditioning?
Well, I was incredibly blessed because I had a brother who raised me, right? He was 10 years older, so he's more like my father. And I had a mother, and both of them were unbelievably supportive. I had 2 other siblings, but you know, they were not the mother and father kind of duo. My brother and my mother always really encouraged each of us to follow our dreams, not our security. And I was really blessed being a Latina girl, right? And because I had a free ride because of my academics to college, and then I had a free ride to law school. And I could have been made to feel horrible about not finishing that. So I actually went to law school while I was acting in Los Angeles because I just didn't know how to really drop that kind of security. And then my brother said to me one day when I was 9 months into law school and I was also, you know, doing a film out of town, which was insane. He said, you know, you just need to follow your passion. What is it that you really, really want? Because there'll always be time for something else. And I realized that what I'd always wanted is to create. So that was a huge decision. And I didn't sleep for nights because that was so huge to leave law school, right? When you have a full scholarship, it was a big, big deal.
I can imagine. Wow. That is so impressive though, that you even were trying to tackle that at the same time, you know, law school and an acting and everything, but that's great. I mean, support of your family means everything. So to have a family that supports you and what you're passionate about, that's really, really cool.
And then you got cast in Ryan's Hope, which films in New York City. What was that experience like going to the Big Apple?
Oh, please. That was the most unbelievable experience. I'd been here like 5 months and I was waitressing and I was teaching and I was doing anything I could. And this was my first, my first audition. And the head of NBC at the time of casting was a man by the name of Joel Thurm, who actually also just wrote a book, who was an incredibly fascinating, wonderfully supportive person. And he actually gave me his sweater during the audition because I was in jeans and a t-shirt. So I auditioned with name actresses, and I had nothing to say. They were saying I did a movie with, you know, whatever, Paul Newman, and I'd be hearing these girls, right? And he just added me to the tail end of the audition just to see what I looked like on camera. He really didn't think I was going to get this. I mean, I'd never seen a camera. And so when we were doing the audition, he said, you know, I'm going to ask you to slate and you need to say what you've done. And so I hadn't done anything in Hollywood. So I just said, hi, I'm Annalicia. I'm an actress and I love it.
Great.
that was it. And so I did my little, you know, on camera thing. And sure enough, 3 or 4 days later, my agent calls me and he says, you better sit down. And I said, why? And he goes, I thought you told me you were a decent actress. And I said, well, I thought I was. I did my school plays. I thought I was okay. And he goes, well, I have to tell you, the casting director just called. And you need to be in New York in 2 days because you got the role.
Oh, my God. That's the best story ever.
Wow.
It just gets better. So get this. So I have 2 days to move out of my Hollywood apartment, right? And so I've got to go get boxes, right? So I drive down to Highland to a big box store. And I park my car. It's 3 o'clock. Park my car. Go up to get the boxes. Come back down and there's no car. And I see it being towed away. Now I have a day and a half to pack, right? It's being towed away. So I see a cop going down the street and I wave him down. I go, help me, help me, help me. And he goes, what is it? And I go, I just got this role and I'm going to be a star and I have to be in New York. Can you please take me to go get my car? And the guys just looked at this 20-year-old girl and they said, come on in, get inside the car. They drove me down there and they were just, you know, they didn't know what to make of me, right? I was so grateful. I went in there, they got my car back, drove home, packed it up, left it all packed up for my brother so I could catch a plane the next day to be on set on Monday.
Oh my God.
This sounds like a play in itself. Yeah, I mean, you going to the tow truck doing that sounds like that could be an audition piece.
Yes. That was a great monologue.
Thank you so much.
Wow. You know, obviously, you know, since we're a horror podcast, we're going to focus on Halloween too, even though, you know, there's a lot. And we do have some questions about your soap time because Tim especially loves soap operas. Especially. But, you know, I guess before we even.
Yes. Yeah. Growing up, were you a fan of horror films? I mean, were they on your radar? Were you into them?
You know, it's so funny. I was going to say, oh, no. But then I remembered that my uncle, who was kind of our guardian, he and his girlfriend took us to his house one day and they got us popcorn and my sister and I was like 7 and she was like 6 and they put us in front of the TV and they said, you're going to get to see a really scary movie. And so I sat there and we saw She Wolf. I can't remember, but was it Ursula Andrews? I can't remember who it was. But it was like, you know, she was an animal, she became an animal. And I just was fascinated by the whole thing, right? So that was like my first intro to horror. And then I remembered seeing this film and I can't remember the name of it. And I'm like desperately looking for it my whole life. You know, I don't know if it was one of the Sinbad movies, but it was this movie and this guy's climbing up the hill, right? And as he's climbing, he's melting because he's climbing closer and closer to the sun. And it had fantastical things in it, like big, huge flying birds and princesses. And I, you know, I've always wanted to find it and I've never found it. I thought, was it Hercules? Was it Simba? You know,
oh my God.
I know. So I'm still looking for that. If anybody.
I'm just going to say, listeners out there, if you know what Annalisa is talking about, please
send us
an email, happyhorrortime@gmail.com, or comment after this, because we would love to find out what this is. That almost sounds like it could be like a Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it
episode.
Does sound like a Twilight Zone.
It wasn't a Twilight Zone. It was a movie, and it might have even been black and white. I mean, it was just, but I remember being impressionable and seeing this young man going up the hill and becoming older and older as he goes up the hill and his face is melting. And I thought, wow. And I mean, I never forgot that. So if a listener gets me the answer, I will send him an autograph of whatever he wants of Halloween.
You heard that. That is an amazing offer. I feel like Tim and I are going to look for that because we really want the autograph. So, you know, we read that prior to getting the role of Janet in Halloween 2, that you were in Rick Rosenthal's acting class, Rick Rosenthal being the director, with Leo Rossi, who plays Bud, Gloria Gifford, who plays Mrs. Alves, and Nancy Stevens, who plays Marion Chambers. That must have been so much fun. What was that acting class like?
And I also have to ask, is it true that Ted Danson and Tom Selleck were in it?
Well, they were in a different night. But I have to tell you, it was one of those classes. When I decided to become an actress, it was a lot of pressure, right? It was like, you know, and I was scared. And even though I was under contract at Universal, it was all a very scary time. I didn't have any confidence. You know, I was only, you know, it was my early 20s. And so a friend of mine who I'd met in New York, because we lived in the same apartment, who was a director, he said, you should look up Milton Castellis. So I did, and I went to the class, and I sat in it, and I thought, you know, I'm getting a really good vibe here, really good vibe. So what Milton gave me, and I think he gave each one of those people you're talking about, including Rick, including Tom, including Michelle Pfeiffer was in my class. Yeah. I mean, we had some heavy hitters in that class, along with all the people you mentioned. What he knew more than anything is he knew who you were, your authentic self. He knew how to break that open so that you could, you know, really capitalize on your authentic casting. So when I started in that class, he had some really talented people like Rick and his wife, Nancy, right? They were boyfriend and girlfriend. And so Rick came up to me and said, you know, I'm having this audition. It's my first film. You know, I'd love you to come out and read. So I went out and read. He is still an incredibly generous, creative person and incredibly talented. And both his kids, his daughter is a director. His son is a cinematographer. Brilliant, right? And Nancy, his wife, is brilliant, not just as an actress, but, you know, she's very much into, you know, making a difference socially. She's just it's a powerful family group. So we each auditioned and in front of the producers, and we got these roles. But what Milton gave me later was I was playing all of these very sweet girls in all of my shows. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me one day, and like 4 months into meeting him, and he said, you need to play Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. That is the role. He goes, you're hiding behind this sweet thing. He goes, but you've got some ancestors there. You got some stuff going on there. He goes, that you need to tap into. So I did Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. I was never the same. I went to my agent and I turned down a lead in a series because she was a sweet girl. And I said to my agent, I don't want to play those roles. I want to play this type of role. And my agents were so shocked that half of them fired me. Only one believed in me because she was willing to take a chance. The role I turned down was in Flamingo Road. That series lasted another year. The casting director got me this other part after I turned down this role from her, and that lasted almost 8 years.
Oh, wow.
So you made the right decision. That's amazing. That's a great story.
That was Milton Castellis. Wow.
All from that acting class. I was interested, like I was going to ask next about the audition process. So you had met Rick Rosenthal in the class. He asked you to read for it. And did you immediately read for Janet, or had you read for multiple parts in Halloween 2?
No, he saw me as Janet. But because remember, I was still playing the sweet girl.
The sweet girl. Right? Yes. Did he tell you much about the part, or she's just like the sweet girl working at the hospital kind of thing? Did he tell you that drunk Dr. Mixter is constantly forcing you to get coffee?
You know, he said, you've got this, you know, this is easy for you. You know, he was really supportive and he believed in us because he'd seen us work in class. Yeah. And so he just said, you know, she's a candy striper. You know, she's young, she's opinionated, she's a goody two shoes. And I said, oh, I can't relate to that. I went to Catholic school. I don't know anything about that. I wore a uniform for like 8 years of my life, right? So he cast me really well because I had to wear a uniform. And I had already been a candy striper in real life.
Oh, my God. So that's perfect. You know, we also have to watch, we obviously watched the special features on the Halloween 2 DVD, of course, because we're that big of fans. And you mentioned in the special features that you had a crush at the time on Leo Rossi. Can you tell us a little about that? And was he a heartbreaker back then?
You know, who wouldn't have a crush on Leo Rossi? He was, you know, especially in class, because he was like this Italian guy from the East Coast,
yeah,
right? Who kind of just said it the way, you know, it was. And he just kind of, you know, let it, like, you know, he was out there with his own, you know, masculinity and his humor and his, you know, gangsterish feeling. And so, you know, I just loved him. Plus, he was the nicest guy in the world. Yeah. And he was extraordinarily safe because he was, you know, he kept boundaries. So when a guy looks like that, acts like that, and is also respectful and keeps boundaries, well, of course you fall in love with them.
I get it.
I mean, Pim's like, people fall in love with me all the time.
No. But, you know, I get it.
No, I definitely see the appeal too.
So this was your first feature film, right? And were you nervous about breaking into the world of film?
Well, it was my first feature, but I had done a couple of small films like The Sacketts at Universal, you know, Coward of the County with, you know, Kenny Rogers. I had done a few little films. So I was not scared at all. And I think as I respected Jamie, I had met Jamie when we were under contract at Universal Studios. And she and I were probably the last contract players there. So I met her one day in the hall, and she just seemed like a really genuine, nice person. So, and Rick was a great person, and the cast, I knew them all. So it wasn't scary at all. It was good.
So it was like a family. It was like a family making a.
And
yeah.
Did you? Because oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It starts from the top down, right? So, I mean, Rick was a great guy. So when you have somebody like that who has your back, who literally has the back of everyone in there and is just trying to work together in a collaborative thing, it's like being doing a play. It's a very different feeling than tacky things that can happen on shows. I've been blessed where I have not been on those shows, but I hear, right?
Yeah.
Did you go back and watch the original Halloween, and what did you think?
So when he asked me to do it, I thought at the time, because I forgot about She and this other thing that I'd seen, I thought at the time, you know, I don't want to do horror. I just don't want to. Can you imagine if my children see something like this when I grow up? So I was such a goody two shoes, right? So I go, no, I don't want to do horror. So I went back and I watched Halloween 1, and I sat there and I go, oh my God, this is the best horror film I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
I mean, yeah. Carpenter did the most amazing job of not having, you know, any gore, any horrific on-camera violence. And it was the scariest thing I'd ever seen. So I just went, wow, this is a trilogy or whatever that I want to be a part of. Right. And so that ended that for me. I was on board all the way because of what the original had done.
Yeah, no, that is great. I mean, Halloween, the original, is my favorite movie of all time. It just, like you said, like I saw it when I was 11, and it, everything from the music to the suspense to just the stalking to everything, it really resonated with me. The whole series I love, obviously. But yeah, I definitely can see why people seeing that. And it just, I mean, it kickstarted the whole slasher genre, but in such a like well done way. So I can definitely see that. You know, your character Janet, as you said, is kind of like the good girl who cares about Laurie Strode and you know, doesn't care much for Leo Rossi's character Bud, who's kind of more foul mouthed and stuff. So we want to know, between Tim and I, Tim is more like the Janet good girl type character, and I'm sort of the foul mouth Bud. So what I want to know, Anna Alicia, in real life, are you more of a Janet or a Bud?
Well, it depends on the day. But I think that I have both in me. And, you know, I mean, I've gotten, you know, a lot freer as I have gotten on my own more and more. So I love freedom. I love the ability to express myself completely and fully, as long as I respect other people's boundaries.
Yes.
But I don't want to, you know, to repress myself. So I try to be respectful. In fact, I am respectful, but I am very, very free. I think when I was young, I was free internally. That's why I was so creative. I would create all of these things, but I lived in a much more, you know, repressive environment because of my uncles, my aunts, my Latino background, You know, we were raised to act a certain way, be a certain way, and I could do that easily. That's why I could play those roles. But there was another part of me that never got full expression. And you know, so now I have full expression, and it's really kind of wonderful. And that's what I wish for everyone, really, you know, wow, as long as we're respectful of others and their boundaries, I think we should be free to express who we are. That it's, you know, people think you can't be free while socially conscious at the same time. You can. You just have to walk that line, right? Of always the respect for the other as you respect yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. That is a great answer. And I tell Tim all the time that I can say a few bad words here and there and
I say
still
no.
Be respectful. And Tim is like, no.
most of the movie takes place at night. Like, and I know that like horror movies that we hear like it messes, but yours is filmed inside a hospital. So like, was that filmed during the day? And did it mess up like your sleep pattern? Like, how did you deal with the day-to-day of filming? Like,
yeah, was it filmed mostly at night?
Or not necessarily, right?
Well, I think about, you know, what I remember, and it's actually true of most productions, is they try to shoot as much as they can during the day, especially when you're inside, and they light it for night, right? It's lit for night. So they try to do that because of overtime. And, but there were a few nights that they had to be shot at night because they were exteriors. Like when they're bringing Jamie in, you know, there's just certain things that had to be shot at night. So, I did some nights, but most of them I remember being during the day because it was an abandoned facility, right? So it wasn't like we had to get out.
Real patients are coming in.
Yeah, in a hurry. We've got some real murders taking place.
Right. But yeah. So you guys, I'm sure, have heard of the fact that I almost lost my eye during that production, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, we have one of our next questions, but we can jump to that right now, is about your death scene, if you want to talk about that.
It's my favorite scene.
We can go in a row.
Okay. Well, then I guess we'll get to the next part, which is very, very important. No, you know, we're again with the extras of Halloween 2. You mentioned that you got to see Leo Rossi naked in his hospital bathtub scene. And we want to ask, because we think, you know, too many people always focus on female nudity in films. And we want to talk more about the male nudity. And was he actually really naked in that tub? Like, he was fully naked in that tub, right?
Well, I never, you know, ventured to peek around the rear shot of it. I can tell you from the rear shot of it, it looked like he was completely naked, but I was not facing so I don't know. But from the rear end, he had a very nice rear end.
He had a very nice
Yay!
Rear end.
Yay!
And I think that it's funny because I know that they always talk about that, like the tub was freezing cold, and it's so funny, like, you know, secrets of acting, because it looks incredibly warm.
It looks like they're burning up
and things like that. But
I do have to say something in regards to that scene, because the truth is, I'm only remembering his butt from the movie.
Oh,
because we weren't allowed in that room.
Oh, closed set.
That's very important for you guys to know, that when there's nudity, only the gaffer or the lighting guy, sometimes not even the director, I mean, are actually in the room, right? Wow. So that everyone feels comfortable and it's out of respect. So no, in real life, I have never seen his behind.
No, that's actually good and respectful. And of course, we asked the question kind of in jest. It's just that, like I said, people focus so much on female nudity and stuff, and we're two gay men who are going to ask about male nudity, you know?
So your death scene is so, like, we love, it's my favorite scene in the movie because it's so iconic, because it's, you are like, have Michael Myers come out of the dark right behind you. But then you mentioned in the DVD that like you fell to the ground, but one time you hit the side and cut your eye. Is that right?
Yeah. Tell us about it, because it's such a creepy scene. Like Tim was saying, I mean, it's such a creepy shot with his mask coming to light. It almost reminds me of the shot in the original when he comes to, you know, approaches Jamie Lee Curtis out of the darkness. It was so well done and it's so creepy. But then we heard this story that you like busted up your head while filming it. Tell us about that.
Stitches?
Yes. So, you know, I didn't understand how creepy it looked or felt because I was in it, right? I was in the front of it. And all I remember is that we had rehearsed it once and there was a mattress on the floor so that when he injected my eye, I would just collapse onto the mattress, right? Because when you get a hypodermic needle in your eye, I guess you hit a certain artery or I don't really know the technicality of it, but basically you're dead. And so you just collapse. So we rehearsed it and I just collapsed. Everything went fine. So he comes in, he gives me this hypodermic needle and I collapse, right? Well, no one knew because there had been a little bit of a miscommunication that the mattress had been moved a little bit and a desk had been moved closer. So as I collapse, right, I collapse into the corner of the desk, full force into my, I forgot what eye. I think it's this one. So yeah, I think it was this one. So my right eye. And so collapse full force. And that's when I used a, not a nice word. I went, oh, and the next thing I said is, can you use it? Because I saw the blood coming out of my eye. And Rick goes, you know, cut. And I go, don't cut, use it. And he said, you can't use it. He goes, you're not going to have bleeding eye during hypodermic plus. We've got to get you to the hospital. He goes, to save your eyes. So I was kind of really upset they weren't using this incredible opportunity. So they rushed me to the hospital. And I was the luckiest woman in the world because there happened to be a surgeon there who had a good hand because I had 12 stitches. So literally he stitched me up and I had a little scar for a while, but very minimal compared to what it could have been. But this is the funniest part. So this is like the second day of shooting that this happens. So we have to shoot one of my biggest scenes in the cafeteria, like, you know, the next day or 2 days later, right, with my face completely swollen, black and blue. So they put all this white makeup on me to cover up all the black and blue. And Rick says, shoot her everything from this other angle. So if you see that scene, you're going to see me looking this way and everything is shot from one angle.
Yeah. I never would have noticed.
I haven't noticed at all. And that thinking of the scene, I know you are kind of sitting in a slant, but it looks so natural, you know?
Look beautiful. Yeah,
Wait, I have to ask, was it surreal filming hospital stuff and then going right to the hospital?
Well, let me think about it. You know, that's kind of my MO. I did a movie called, the one where we're flying over and I'm like the stewardess who saves everyone on the Aloha airline disaster. It's a true story. Yeah. I forgot the name of the film, but I did this film. And so I'm the hero. So I did 2 weeks of all of this very physical stuff going up and down all the rows, saving all the people, dragging them as I'm being bumped and everything, because, you know, the whole fuselage just came off on that airplane. It's a true story. So up in the air, this woman is saving everyone, right? And so they pumped in all of this smoke into that scene. And as soon as it was over, I went straight to the hospital. I had Epstein-Barr for the next 6 months because I had so much bad shit going. And when I went in, the doctors looked at me and they go, are you an abused woman? I had black and blue marks all over. They were going to report me as a battered wife.
Oh my God.
And I said, no, it's my show. And I choose to do this because I used to have to bump myself into the back of all the seats.
Oh my God. Wow.
You're dedicated.
I was going to say you are dedicated from kept falling into. And then one tiny little thing for the needle that goes in, was that just like a retractable needle, the kind of thing? I mean, that they used for it, obviously.
Yeah, it really went into my eye.
Yeah. No, wait. Oh, okay. I was like, for a second, I'm like, I know that's a stupid question, but it's like, you're like, actually, they really injected me every time.
She goes, it hurts every day.
With saline.
Oh, this is totally so fine. Weird. But tomorrow they're actually injecting into my eye because I have a stye inside my eye.
Oh, wow. Okay. Don't watch Halloween 2 tonight.
No, I will not watch Halloween 2.
You know, something we wanted to ask with you mentioned that you had met Jamie Lee Curtis before you guys filmed together. What was it like working with her on this movie? Did you guys hang out at all? And what was that wig like?
Well, Jamie's a beautiful woman. And, you know, so this wig was, you know, didn't do her justice because she's such a pretty woman. But, you know, I mean, that was what she had to do because to match up with the last show. But I always give people their space, particularly people that are recognizable, because I want them to feel comfortable when they're working.
Yeah.
So when she was working, we said a nice hello. She remembered me. I remembered her. But we didn't have any scenes together other than, you know, maybe some quick stuff. So I did not get into her space. That's just what I do as a rule of thumb, because I think, you know, we can't forget that even though it's fun, it is work. Yes. And also people deserve their space.
Yeah, yeah, no, totally. No, that makes a lot of sense. Was John Carpenter on set at all? Because obviously he didn't direct this film, but he wrote it and produced and was so involved in everything. And with Rick Rosenthal, did he come on set a lot, or did Deborah Hill?
I believe either him or Deborah ended up directing one of the last scenes that we shot, which I think is the one with me and the walkie-talkies. Yes. I think there was one day they came in just to do pickups. I don't know if Rick wasn't available. So I believe it was John. I met him once and met Deborah as well, but I don't remember the context really. I'm just a fan of his for that first Halloween one, because I really believe he did set the genre up in such a different way. And you know who else did that later was that that horror film where they all used cameras. It was the first time that
Blair Witch Project.
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That was the next one to set the next stage, right? Of how we would end up being able to get into those worlds.
Yes. And then Scream with the whole self-aware thing with horror, you know?
Yes.
And none of your scenes are with Donald Pleasance, but did you get to spend any time with Donald Pleasance?
Yeah. Did you meet him?
I did meet him. He was a very nice man. Again, I didn't spend time with him. You know, I don't know why. I don't really go in there to make friends or to, you know.
And a job to do.
I also don't want to be a fan.
I get it. Right?
I was just going to say, we are.
Right. But you are not working alongside them.
Yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
I don't want them to feel uncomfortable that they have to deal with this actress who shows up every day. Oh my God. I saw Donald, Halloween one.
She's like, Donald Pleasance, can you please say I shot him 6 times over and over to me?
Right.
No, so that totally makes
sense. You make organic relationships, right?
Exactly, yeah. Okay, we're going to play just a quick little game with you where we give you a few quick true or false questions to see how well you know Halloween 2 40 years later. Just a few. I know. She's like, oh, really quick things. We'll see how you do. Tim?
Okay, true or false? SNL alumni Dana Carvey is in Halloween 2.
I take the 5th.
It is actually true. He is a he works with a reporter who's going to the scene in Halloween. It's not the hospital scenes, but he had like this tiny role where he's working with one of the reporters. It's a crazy cameo. Okay, I think you're gonna like this one. True or false, your line of dialogue about Michael Myers being seen by your friend behind the Lost River Drive-In movie theater inspired a Halloween double feature event at the Mission Tiki Drive-In Theater in Montclair, California, where they rebranded the entire theater as the Lost River Drive-In.
Wow, I had no idea.
That is yes, I know. I actually put that in there because I really just wanted to tell you this. These people, and I wish I'll have to get their exact names, but they put on an event and they called it the Lost River Drive-In. And it shows a picture of you as Janet saying that, you know, to Bud, because, you know, your friend saw Michael Myers behind the Lost River Drive-In, and they called the theater the Lost River Drive-In. They have like t-shirts and memorabilia. We'll have to tag them when they post this, but it's all based on Janet's line from that movie.
You know, that is what's so cool about what we do, right? It's that it really sparks entertainment for people.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's really great, actually. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, of course.
Okay. True or false? Baywatch star Billy Warlock was in Halloween 2.
Yes.
Yes,
there you go. We're doing
a lot. He had a small cameo because Dick Warlock, who played Michael Myers, who obviously you worked with, his son, he just comes in and he asks about his friend Ben Tramer, who got run over and stuff. But yeah, Dick Warlock, I guess, worked both of them. And I've also heard great things about working with Dick Warlock, the stuntman who played Michael Myers. I mean, you obviously I heard he's very protective and very easy to work with. Is that was your experience?
He's all of those things. He's a super nice man. I've seen him recently. I think I saw him like 5 years ago. Just a really warm, very, very, grateful man for the opportunity he was given, you know, to be a part of this legacy.
Yeah, no, totally. I have, okay, one last one, and I think this one you will definitely get correct. True or false, Janet could not work that walkie-talkie for shit.
For sure. It was like having an iPhone 10 now for me.
It is just amazing. I love you're like, I don't know how to work this, you're turning all the knobs and everything. Oh, poor Janet. But anyway.
when the movie was released, was there like a red carpet premiere? Was there a cast and crew screening? And what was your thoughts when you first saw it?
There was a screening for all of us who were involved in the film. And I went in there, and this is what I'm saying. It's like, I have these two people in me. I went in there as this little goody good shoes that thought, oh my goodness. It's like, I hope I can share this with my children when I have them one day. And so I watched it, and it was like, I was scared and all this stuff was going on. And I left and I thought, you know, Rick did such a good job. Everyone did such a good job, but I can never show these to my children. And the most unbelievable thing is I have children, right? Like whatever, 15 years later. And then my children are like 9 and 7 or 9 and 11. And I finally decide I'm going to tell them, because they don't even know I'm an actress, that I did this, right? So I turn it on and we watch it together, and they're in, and they look at me and they go, that's nothing, Mom. Because of course, in the new generation that they were a part of, that was like, that wasn't horrifying at all to them. I mean, yeah. They were all upset when their mom got a needle in their eye. That was hard for them to watch.
That is such a great story. They're like, I mean, but it brings us to our next question, because when did you first become aware of all the fandom behind the Halloween series? Like, did you ever think this movie would become such a big part of your life even 40 years later?
I never thought of it that way at all. I thought for me, it was a stepping stone forward, you know, generously offered by a director, a very generous director that I knew. I thought it was just a learning step for me. And, you know, I never, you know, when you're in the middle of things, you never, you know, really keep track. At least I don't keep track of things, right? I went from there. Then I did another film. I did Falcon Crest, right? I just kept working. So I never kept track. And it wasn't. And, you know, I walked away from everything in 1990 when I had my children. I just walked away. My mom was an invalid. So I walked away to care for my family and my mom. And it wasn't until I started to come back and I opened up a startup production company to mentor writers. And all of a sudden, my girlfriend of the person that was working for me said, you need to open up a Facebook for your fans. And I didn't even realize it. So we opened up a Facebook, and all of a sudden, all of these fans are like 35 years old. I'm going, what were they doing watching me when they were, you know, 5 years old? And so I'm looking at all these, and a large portion was horror sci-fi. Right? It wasn't just Falcon Crest, the diehards were horror and sci-fi. Yeah. And so, you know, right now I'm creating a sci-fi horror series as I'm going back to work, because I want to tap into those fans. I had no idea what a huge impact that film would make for that answer to that question.
Yeah, no, that's definitely. And do you keep in contact with any of the cast and crew? I mean,
from Halloween too? Yeah.
I see them, right? Rick is a dear friend. His wife is a dear friend. And so when I go over to their home, I'll see Leo, right? I'll see Lance. You know, I've seen Gloria. I saw Gloria at the grocery store the other day. So, the young woman who was in the tub with Leo.
Pamela Susan Shoup. Yeah,
Pamela Susan Shoup. I saw her at an appointment I had like about 2 years ago. I saw her and her husband, who is an ex-priest, which is interesting. And very, very, actually wonderful couple. And I found out they live down the street. So,
small world.
Wow, you need to have a Halloween 2 viewing party with everyone.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It is crazy. Have you ever attended a horror convention or like a Halloween series convention?
I never had until 3 or 4 years ago. I went to Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I attended the big one there. And we had all of us went out, like 10 of us went out, and there's a question and answer thing. It was really cool. It was so cool. That's when I just realized I was very grateful for these people who really, you know, they made me feel, wonderful. I had no idea that I had impacted them.
That's so cool. And as fans, and we say this a lot, like, you know, we love it when the people that were in these movies we love embrace them and really love them. And what we've heard from a lot of people we've interviewed is that they go to these conventions not really knowing what to expect, you know, thinking, is this going to be awkward, weird, and then end up meeting like the sweetest, nicest people that are just very committed, you know, because it's just people like us, people that absolutely love these movies, love the people that were in them, you know, keep up with them throughout their careers. And yeah, so it's really cool. I mean, I think we'd love to see you at another convention at some time in the future, so hopefully maybe you'll give that a shot at some point.
I was going to ask you a couple of Falcon Crest questions, if that's okay. Well, I just have two. So you were very lucky and got to act with Lorenzo Lamas, who played Lance, and William R. Moses, who played Cole. Who do you prefer?
Let me think. Maybe I should pick David Selby.
Oh, okay.
you know what? I was the most... just the outrageously lucky woman. I mean, I remember going up to Warner Brothers and seeing, it was my first day on the set, and looking up at these staircases that went into the huge stage, and there was Lorenzo standing out there. And I looked up and I thought, oh my God, that's going to be my husband. And then I remember walking on the set, and then they had me in a car, and Billy Moses comes up, and it's my first scene with him. And I look up and I go, oh my God, that's going to be my husband. And I just thought, am I living a dream? So I love men to begin with. But look at the men
I have.
Right? Exactly. Men are the best. So I had Lorenzo, I had Billy, I had David Selby, I had, you know, Ken, was it Nolan, who was the priest? Yeah. I mean, I had, and I could name another 10 gorgeous men, right? And talented men that were part of my story. I mean, it was just like, whoa. So, you know what? I could never pick. I had them all, and they
That's
were all
okay.
You're like, I'll take all of the above.
This is a silly question, but your cousin on the show, Robin, was played by Barbara Howard, and she was an alum of the Friday 13th Part 4, The Final Chapter. Did you ever talk about your horror history?
We love setting up connections like that when people have worked with other people from horror movies. But yeah, did you know she was in a Friday the 13th? Or...
Do you remember Barbara Howard?
I remember, but I don't remember ever having a discussion.
We'd be like, you know, I died in Halloween 2 and you died in Friday the 13th Part 4. Want to get nachos?
I just never thought of it quite that way because we were doing Falcon Crest. So
no, totally.
If there's a reboot of Falcon Crest, would you be interested in doing it?
Oh my God, I would want to be the driving force. Ooh. I have this unbelievable kind of Falcon Crest horror mix.
Oh, can it take place on Halloween?
No, but it takes place when she comes back from the dead.
Oh yeah, because your character was in a fire and then came back as Samantha, right?
Yeah, so to me, you never saw her burnt alive, right? And then you saw her as Samantha. I think she was posing as Samantha. I think it was Melissa. So would I do a reboot? Yes, but I think she would be much more into the spiritual realm. So I think it would be a very interesting thing. Yes, I'm all for it. Let's
like
get
Charmed.
It.
That's all.
Sounds like Charmed.
Yeah, that's all. No, that's
dark. Think of dark Charmed.
Dark Charmed.
Dark Charmed.
The Dark Charm. No, that is awesome. You know, just a couple last questions. Like you were saying, what we'd love to know, because you were saying that you are looking into doing like a horror sci-fi project. Can you tell us more about that? Because that sounds really cool.
Well, I can't say too much because, you know, it's in the zeitgeist and you don't want, you know, the energy to go out. But I can tell you, I'm going to share this with you. So I've always felt that I was indigenous, always. But, you know, I always had light, you know, very blonde hair when I was younger, very full face, very, you know, more Spanish, Italian looking. And I kept saying to my mother, no, I feel like I'm Indian, right? And so fast forward to Ancestry, I find out I'm 18%.
Oh,
and not only that, but I come from a group of people. I think it's called the Hopala B2 people that actually crossed over the land bridge before it melted. Wow. So it's really, really cool. So I'm creating something that feeds into that DNA of mine. Right. The more I don't really want to say all the details, but that will go into Kind of like, you know, the end of the world aspect of it. How do we save it? And, you know, this kind of situation from a folkloric, you know, Hispanic indigenous roots. So it's
wow.
Cool.
That's really a great idea.
It's really cool. And, I'm going to let you guys know as soon as it, you know, I'm really putting it out there, because I'd love you to get it out there.
Yes, yeah, we will definitely promote. Absolutely. That sounds really cool. I mean, that's the thing. And like the thing about like people who loved you in Halloween, like people like this will follow your career and support you all through it. So we're all for that.
Yeah. And I also realized that there was a huge sci-fi following just because I did Battlestar and Buck Rogers. There's a whole other, you know, so it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Sci-fi fans are just as dedicated.
I mean, this is a silly question, but when we were doing our research on you, you did an appearance on Arsenio Hall. And I was just wondering, I thought there was some real chemistry there. And I was just wondering your thoughts.
Did he ever ask you out?
Yeah.
No, he never asked me out, but we liked each other a lot. And we liked each other a lot because we like to play.
Yeah, I could see it.
And he wanted to play, and I don't think he got to play with everybody, right? And I like to play. I grew up with brothers. So, you know, it was chemistry, but it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't really sexual. It was more like teasing, like almost brothers do, right? About this and that. And then we played off of the chemistry because we thought that would be fun for the audience, right?
It was.
You know, he's a gorgeous man, and he's also a really nice man. So it was really easy to do that. Again, I felt safe. Right. So to me, it's if you feel safe, you can play on all kinds of different energy levels. Yeah. Right. So I'm a big fan of Arsenio's. He was super nice to me. I did a show twice, I think.
Yeah.
And each time I went on, he was just a really, in my book, he was always very supportive.
That's really cool. Yeah, it's nice to hear
and
that.
And funny too.
No, and that's the thing. Yeah. He was funny. It was a great talk show. God, I remember. Yeah, the talk show. He was so much energy. You know, it was just great.
And very, very out there. Very authentic. Made his guests feel comfortable, right? And yet made it a good time for everybody.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So we have our final question, and we ask this to everyone we interview, and it is a little bit putting you on the spot, but we're just going to do and see what your answer is. What is one thing that you can tell us about your experience working on Halloween 2 that you've never told any other interviewer, podcast, convention, anything? It could be the smallest detail to earth-shattering details or something, just anything, as long as you've never told it to any other interviewer, podcaster, or publication.
Does it have to be about the production itself?
It could be anything.
It could be adjacent.
I will tell you the most insane story that I've ever
told
anyone. So I can't go into all of the details, but I met a cast member and I was single. He was single. And so he invited me to go flying one night in his plane.
Wow.
So I go to the Santa Monica airport to meet this man I do not know anything about, other than the fact that he is a cast member and nice looking. Mm-hmm. So I don't know very many people. I'm kind of conservative. I'm kind of shy. So I thought, you know, it's time you have a date in Hollywood.
Total Janet.
So, right? So I go and I meet this, I go with this guy to the airplane and, you know, in the Santa Monica airport, and we go onto a little tiny plane that only two people fit in. We take off and I'm going, oh my God, are you out of your mind? You're flying with this guy you've never met. And he begins to do flips.
Shut up. Oh. I can't. Oh my God.
All over the sky.
He did a loop-de-loop.
We're doing loop-de-loops. And so we do all these loop-de-loops. And I'm going, just have fun and pray you get back down. So we did all of this. We go back down and we land. And I lived to tell that story.
Wow.
Wait a second. And I take it we're not going to get that cast member's name out of you today?
I can't even remember his name. That's how much I knew him.
Oh, wow. So he wasn't one of the main cast members.
I think he had an important role for like a couple of days. but I don't remember. He was, you guys might remember because he was very good looking.
Yeah.
He was blonde.
Maybe the Deputy Hunt, the guy who plays Deputy Hunt.
That might be him.
Oh my God. That is.
And I never saw him again.
Wow, that's a good story.
That is like one of the best stories we've gotten to that question. I mean, we've gotten some juicy details from people, but that's like really great. One of the best stories. Wow.
Yes, it was what naivety and stupidity will get you.
But was it he kind of used the like, hey, we're both going to be in Halloween 2, let's get together kind of thing?
He was flirtatious. You know, I was curious. That's and so cool. And then he took it to the next level with the flying upside down in that plane.
That is scary.
And I took it to the level of when I was young, I used to pick up hitchhikers and I didn't die.
That was a common thing though back then. Hitchhiking was normal.
Wow. So I just think I was always like Mr. Magoo. They used to call me Mr. Magoo. I would like just go walk around life, just go, come, come, come. And I was really lucky to meet nice people, honestly. Yeah. At the end of the day, he knew how to fly the plane at the end of the day.
Wow. I mean, that is a great, great story. Well, I just want to say thank you so much. We are so grateful that you took the time to speak with us. We're such big fans. I mean, and we're so excited to see your next project. And again, we're really appreciative that you took the time and that we could have you on our podcast. Yeah,
especially on your special Sunday.
Yes, it was, you know, it is a special Sunday with my daughter getting engaged last night and having the brunch today. And she's an actress and she's wonderful. And you guys would go crazy over her.
Can we congratulate her on air? What is her name?
Her professional name is Catherine Dillon. She's been on a lot of things that you would have seen in a couple of little films. And also she did, you'll look her up and you'll see all the stuff that she's done. And this new little horror short, I think is really going to do well because it's funny, it's scary, it's timely, it's really great. And that's the title that I gave you earlier on. So I can type it up and send it to you.
Perfect. Yeah.
I think it's called Noche de Infierno and it's got a Latino element to it. It's in English, but the Latino element of, you know, sorority and what, you know, women do to get into sorority, but it's got a social message to it that's pretty cool. And it's really funny. And it's a little scary, but really funny.
That's so awesome. Well, the one last thing before we go, do you mind if we take a quick screenshot pic with you on this?
No, I don't mind.
Okay, hold on one second.
Let me fix my hair.
Yeah, let's fix our hair. Before we take the picture, I just wanted to say it's really nice to meet the two of you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Are you a couple?
No, we are good, very good friends. We've been friends for probably 12 years. We bonded over our love for horror. And then we just started kind of talking about it and realizing, you know, maybe this could make a good podcast. And then we started reaching out to people in different horror movies and interviewing people. And now we've been doing it for almost a year. We've talked to like tons of people and it's been great. It's just been so much fun.
Yeah. Matt has a boyfriend, so if you know any gay friends,
for Tim.
I do know, but he's a little young for you. So
Tim is single and would appreciate any hookups. I mean, connection.
I'm not giving you a hookup. I will.
Sorry. I meant hookup in the nurse in the Janet way of saying it. Of just
I'm so
hanging
conservative.
Out.
We have boyfriends. We don't have hookups.
I didn't say it, Matt.
I meant connecting.
And he has a boyfriend.
Yes, I do. I do have a boyfriend. So, okay,
but you know, I find the chemistry between the two of you really nice. You both are. It's a really nice, you know, bad cop, good cop kind of feeling to it.
Oh, thank you. No, that is very, very sweet of you. And just so you know, we're going to be releasing this in October. Big surprise for Halloween. And so, we're just so excited. So are we ready for this screenshot?
Yes.
Okay.
Yay.
Perfect. Yes. Thank you so much, Anna Lisa, for taking the time today. Again, we will keep you posted on when the episode comes out and we hope to stay in touch and we're incredibly grateful.
Yes. You're awesome.
Well, my pleasure. It was really a nice way to end my Sunday. Thank you so much.
Perfect. Okay, well, great. Well, enjoy the rest of your day and we'll talk with you soon.
Okay, take care, guys.
Okay, bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. This podcast is hosted by Matt Emmer and myself, Tim Murdoch. It's co-produced by Jacob Randall, who also hosts a great true crime podcast, Crime of Your Life.
Please check out our website, happyhorrortime.com, where you can stream all of our episodes and see all our pretty little episode images. You can also follow our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
We love hearing from our listeners, so if you want to contact us about one of our recent episodes, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com.
If you'd like to support this podcast, please sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/happyhorrortime. Patrons get access to our growing library of bonus episodes where we discuss older horror films, look back at popular franchises, and all kinds of other fun horror stuff.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And we hope you have a happy horror time.